Chapter 15. Except for the squeaking of mice behind the wainscoting, and an occasional rustling sound as one of the bats in the chimney stirred uneasily in its sleep, Roaster Abbey lay hushed and still. 'Twas now the very witching time of night, and in the blue room Rory and Monica, pleasantly fatigued after the activities of the day, slumbered peacefully. In the Queen Elizabeth room, Mrs. Spotsworth, Pomona in her basket at her side, had also dropped off. In the Anne Boleyn room, Captain Bigger, the good man taking his rest, was dreaming of old days on the Mae Wang River, which, we need scarcely inform our public, is a tributary of the larger and more crocodile-infested Wang Mae. Jill, in the clock room, was still awake, staring at the ceiling with hot eyes, and Bill, counting sheep, in the Henry VIII room, had also failed to find oblivion. The specific recommended by Jeeves might be widely recognised, but so far it had done nothing toward enabling him to knit up the ravelled sleeve of care. 822, murmured Bill. 823, he broke off, leaving the 824th sheep, an animal with a more than usually vacuous expression on its face, suspended in the air into which it had been conjured up. Someone had knocked on the door, a knock so soft and deferential that it could have proceeded from the knuckle of only one man. It was consequently without surprise that a moment later he perceived Jeeves entering.
"Your lordship will excuse me," said Jeeves courteously. "I would not have disturbed your lordship had I not, listening at the door, gathered from your lordship's remarks that the stratagem which I proposed had proved unsuccessful."
"No, it hasn't worked yet," said Bill. "But come in, Jeeves, come in." He would have been glad to see anything that was not a sheep. "Don't tell me," he said, starting as he noted the gleam of intelligence in his visitor's eye, "that you've thought of something."
"Yes, my lord. I'm happy to say that I fancy I have found a solution to the problem which confronted us."
"Jeeves, you're a marvel!"
"Thank you very much, my lord."
"I remember Bertie Wooster saying to me once that there was no crisis which you were unable to handle."
"Mr. Wooster has always been far too flattering, my lord."
"Nonsense! Not nearly flattering enough. If you have really put your finger on a way of overcoming the superhuman difficulties in our path..."
"I feel convinced that I have, my lord."
Bill quivered inside his mauve pyjama jacket. "Think well, Jeeves," he urged. "Somehow or other, we have got to get Mrs. Spotsworth out of her room for a lapse of time sufficient to enable me to bound in, find that pendant, scoop it up, and bound out again. All this without a human eye resting upon me. Unless I have completely misinterpreted your words, owing to having suffered a nervous breakdown from counting sheep, you seem to be suggesting that you can do this." "How? That is the question that springs to the lips. With mirrors?" Jeeves did not speak for a moment. A pained look had come into his finely chiselled face. It was as though he'd suddenly seen some sight which was occasioning him distress.
"Excuse me, my lord. I am reluctant to take what is possibly a liberty on my part."
"Oh, carry on, Jeeves. You have our ear. What's biting you?"
"It is your pyjamas, my lord. Had I been aware that your lordship was in the habit of sleeping in mauve pyjamas, I would have advised against it. Mauve does not become your lordship. I was once compelled, in his best interests, to speak in a similar vein to Mr. Wooster, who, at that time, was also a mauve pyjama addict."
Bill found himself at a loss. "How have we got onto the subject of pyjamas?" he asked wonderingly.
"They thrust themselves on the notice, my lord. That very aggressive purple. If your lordship would be guided by me and substitute a quiet blue, or possibly a light pistachio green..."
"Jeeves!"
"My lord?"
"This is no time to be prattling of pyjamas."
"Very good, my lord."
"As a matter of fact, I rather fancy myself in mauve. But that, as I say, is neither here nor there. Let us postpone the discussion to a more suitable moment. I will, however, tell you this. If you really have something to suggest with reference to that pendant, and that something brings home the bacon, you may take these mauve pyjamas and raise them to the ground and sow salt on the foundations.
Thank you very much, my lord.
It'll be a small price to pay for your services. Well, now that you've got me all worked up, tell me more. What's the good news? What is this scheme of yours?
A quite simple one, my lord. It is based on... Bill uttered a cry.
Don't tell me! Let me guess. The psychology of the individual?
Precisely, my lord.
Bill drew in his breath sharply. I thought as much. Something told me it was. Many a time and oft, exchanging dry martinis with Bertie Wooster in the bar of the Drones Club, I've listened to him, rapt, as he spoke of you and the psychology of the individual. He said that once you get your teeth into the psychology of the individual, it's all over except chucking one's hat in the air and doing spring dances. Proceed, Jeeves. You interest me strangely. The individual whose psychology you've been brooding on at the present juncture is, I take it, Mrs. Spotswith? Am I right or wrong, Jeeves?
Perfectly correct, my lord. Has it occurred to your lordship what is Mrs. Spotswith's principal interest? The thing uppermost in the lady's mind?
Bill gaped. You haven't come here at 2 a.m. to suggest that I dance the Charleston with her again?
Oh, no, my lord.
Well, when you spoke of her principal interest,
there is another facet of Mrs. Spotswith's character which you have overlooked, my lord. I concede that she is an enthusiastic Charleston performer, but what principally occupies her thoughts is psychical research. Since her arrival at the Abbey, she has not ceased to express a hope that she may be granted the experience of seeing the spectre of Lady Agatha. It was that I had in mind when I informed your lordship that I had formulated a scheme for obtaining the pendant based on the psychology of the individual.
Bill sank back on the pillows, a disappointed man. No, Jeeves, he said. I won't do it.
My lord?
I see where you're heading. You want me to dress up in a farthingale and wimple and sneak into Mrs. Spotswith's room, your contention being that if she wakes and sees me, she will simply say, "Ah, the ghost of Lady Agatha," and go to sleep again. It can't be done, Jeeves. Nothing will induce me to dress up in women's clothes, not even in such a deserving cause as this one. I might stretch a point and put on the old moustache and black patch.
I would not advocate it, my lord. Even on the race course, I've observed clients, on seeing your lordship, start back with visible concern. A lady discovering such an apparition in her room might quite conceivably utter a piercing scream.
Bill threw his hands up with a despondent groan. Well, there you are, then. The thing's off. Your scheme falls to the ground and becomes null and void.
No, my lord. Your lordship has not, if I may say so, grasped the substance of the plan I am putting forward. The essential at which one aims is the inducing of Mrs. Spotswith to leave her room, thus rendering it possible for your lordship to enter and secure the pendant. I propose now, with your lordship's approval, to knock on Mrs. Spotswith's door and request the loan of a bottle of smelling salts.
Bill clutched at his hair. You said, Jeeves?
Smelling salts, my lord.
Bill shook his head. Counting those sheep has done something to me, he said. My hearing's become affected. It sounded to me just as if you had said smelling salts.
I did, my lord. I would explain that I required them in order to restore your lordship to consciousness.
There again, I could have sworn that I heard you say, restore your lordship to consciousness.
Precisely, my lord. Your lordship has sustained a severe shock. Happening to be in the vicinity of the ruined chapel at about the hour of midnight, your lordship observed the wraith of Lady Agatha and was much overcome. How your lordship contrived to totter back to your room, your lordship will never know, but I found your lordship there in what appeared to be a coma, and immediately applied to Mrs. Spotswith for the loan of her smelling salts.
Bill was still at a loss.
I don't get the gist, Jeeves.
If I might elucidate my meaning still further, my lord, the thought I had in mind was that learning that Lady Agatha was, if I may so term it, on the wing, Mrs. Spotswood's immediate reaction would be an intense desire to hasten to the ruined chapel in order to observe the manifestation for herself. I would offer to escort her thither, and during her absence...
It's never immediately that the ordinary man, stunned by some revelation of genius, is able to find words with which to express his emotion. When Alexander Graham Bell, meeting a friend one morning in the year 1876, said, "Oh, hello, George, heard the latest, I invented the telephone yesterday," it is probable that the friend merely shuffled his feet in silence. It was the same with Bill now. He could not speak. He lay there dumbly, while remorse flooded over him that he could ever have doubted this man. It was just as Bertie Wooster had so often said, "Let this fish-fed mastermind get his teeth into the psychology of the individual, and it was all over except chucking your hat in the air and doing spring dances."
"Jeeves!"
he began at length, finding speech. But Jeeves was shimmering through the door.
"You're smelling salts, my lord," he said, turning his head on the threshold, "if your lordship will excuse me."
It was perhaps 2 minutes, though to Bill it seemed longer, before he returned bearing a small bottle.
"Well?"
said Bill eagerly.
"Everything has gone according to plan, my lord. The lady's reactions were substantially as I had anticipated. Mrs. Spotswood, on receiving my communication, displayed immediate interest. Is your lordship familiar with the expression, 'Jiminy Christmas'?"
"No, I don't think I ever heard it." "You don't mean Merry Christmas?"
"No, my lord, Jiminy Christmas." It was what Mrs. Spotswood observed on receiving the information that the phantasm of Lady Agatha was to be seen in the ruined chapel. The words, I gathered, were intended to convey surprise and elation. She assured me that it would take her but a brief time to hop into a dressing gown, and that, at the conclusion of that period, she would be with me with, I understood her to say, her hair in a braid. I am to return in a moment and accompany her to the scene of the manifestation. I will leave the door open a few inches, so that your lordship, by applying your lordship's eye to the crack, may be able to see us depart. As soon as we have descended the staircase, I would advocate instant action, for I need scarcely remind your lordship that time is
of the essence.
No, you certainly don't have to tell me that. You remember what you were saying about cheetahs, with reference to their speed of foot, my lord?
That's right. Half a mile in 45 seconds, I think you said.
Yes, my lord.
Well, the way I shall move would leave the nippiest cheetah standing at the post.
That will be highly satisfactory, my lord. I, on my side, may mention that on the dressing table in Mrs. Spotswood's room I observed a small jewel case, which I have no doubt contains the pendant. The dressing table is immediately beneath the window. Your lordship will have no difficulty in locating it.
He was right, as always. It was the first thing that Bill saw when, having watched the little procession of two out of sight down the stairs, he hastened along the corridor to the Queen Elizabeth room. There, as Jeeves had stated, was the dressing table. On it was the small jewel case of which he had spoken, and in that jewel case, as he opened it with shaking hands, Bill saw the pendant. Hastily, he slipped it into the pocket of his pyjamas and was turning to leave when the silence, which had been complete but for his heavy breathing, was shattered by a series of dreadful screams. Reference has been made earlier to the practice of the dog Pomona of shrieking loudly to express the ecstasy she always felt on beholding a friend, or even what looked to her like a congenial stranger. It was ecstasy that was animating her now. In the course of that session on the rustic seat when Bill had done his cooing, she had taken an immediate fancy to her host, as all dogs did. Meeting him now, in this informal fashion, just at a moment when she'd been trying to reconcile herself to the solitude which she so disliked, she made no attempt to place any bounds on her self-expression. Screams, sufficient in number and volume to have equipped a dozen baronets stabbed in the back in libraries, burst from her lips, and their effect on Bill was devastating. The author of The Hunting of the Snark says of one of his protagonists in a powerful passage, "So great was his fright that his waistcoat turned white." And the experience through which he was passing nearly caused Bill's mauve pyjamas to do the same. Though fond of Pomona, he did not linger to fraternise. He shot out of the door at a speed which would have had the most athletic cheetah shrugging its shoulders helplessly, and arrived in the corridor just as Jill, roused from sleep by those awful cries, came out of the clock room. She watched him steal softly into the Henry VIII room, and thought in bitter mood that a more suitable spot for him could scarcely have been found. It was some quarter of an hour later, as Bill, lying in bed, was murmuring, 998... 999, 1,000, that Jeeves entered. He was carrying a salver. On that salver was a ring. "I encountered Miss Wyvern in the corridor a few moments ago, my lord," he said. "She desired me to give this to your lordship."